passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Second half of the show is live. We welcome you back, and what a weekend this is going to be in the SEC. And how about it? LSU in Missouri, starting it off on ESPN. OU in Texas, we are counting that officially as an SEC game. Maryland taking on Ohio State. Glad to see the Buckeyes play at least a competitive team. How about Alabama playing an unranked A&M team? Kentucky and Georgia, the headliner, and Notre Dame and Louisville. We will talk to Pat Smith, bottom of the hour, about this weekend for the Crimson Tide and what is at stake. We'll also get his thoughts on the progression of the Auburn program. Daryl is in Baton Rouge. Hey, Daryl, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. How you doing?
Okay, thank you, Daryl.
What I want to talk about today is Greg Brooks. He's from all reports I get that he's a real great guy. Real backs the team, a good teammate, a good player. And I want to call on the Feinbaum Nation, like we've done many times before on this show, to take a minute and offer their thoughts and prayers to comfort him and his family as they go through such a difficult time. If everybody would just do that, the power of prayer would bring these people some comfort.
Well, Daryl, that's a really nice and generous thing to say, because this is a really tough diagnosis today. I don't know much more than what you do, but I think everyone was hoping for something better.
Yeah, we were. And that's really all I got today, Paul, is for everybody to offer up their thoughts and prayers.
Well, Daryl, thank you. We appreciate what you said, and I hope everyone will take heed. Thank you very, very much. Jenny is in Florida. Hello, Jenny.
Hey, Bob. Paul, hey. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. I can.
Okay. First time I've been called twice, but that's okay. Listen, I want it to commend Miss Terry on talent saving. Get after those butts for Alabama. That takes a strong woman to tell a strong man what to do. I am a Georgia fan, and I graduated from FSU. So I just wanted to shout
Hey, Jenny,
out
if I could offer
Terry.
This, and I haven't been there lately, but when I lived in Alabama, I spent some time on several occasions at Saban's home with Miss Terry. And it does not take a lot for her to tell him what to do. She's downright hilarious in talking about Nick Saban. Nor is she shy.
She seems like she behind every great woman, every man, there's a great woman, and that's Miss Terry. So
I agree with you. She's
thank you.
She's amazing,
you
and,
know?
She may have saved Nick Saban's season by her admonition. Let's check out Manuel in Texas. Hello, Manuel.
What's going on, Paul Feinbaum?
Manuel, just getting ready for the Cotton Bowl Saturday.
Oh, man, it's going to be great, man. It's going to be great. Hey, since you started there, let me tell you something, man. I've been hearing nothing but talk from the OU side. You know, they're all pumped up talking about how great their defense is and how many points their offense is scoring and this and that. Man, I don't want to hear none of that nonsense, Paul. That's the same stuff they said last year, too.
What was that score last year? 40, I mean, it was
49 to nothing.
49 to nothing.
Nada.
I bet it's more competitive this year.
I don't know, Paul. Look, they were holding teams. The cupcakes they played last year before they got into Big 12 play, they were holding them to 10 points per game. And that's the same thing they're doing right now. They played a cupcake schedule thus far. They played a couple of those, you know, FCS teams that Brett Yormark's bringing into the Big 12, Cincinnati, you know, and they're holding them to under 10 points per game. And when they get in there with the Texas Longhorns and Quinn Ewers, who I disagree with Bruce Feldman, I think Quinn Ewers is up there with the best quarterbacks. I do believe he got a little bit of a bad rap for leaving his high school early and going to Ohio State for some NIL money, but who can blame the kid? You know, he's developing well. Steve Sarkisian's got a track record of developing quarterbacks. I think Quinn Ewers is a top two or three quarterback, even if he comes out next year with Drake May, Caleb Williams, and the rest of those jokers that are out there balling out. But that OU defense is smoke and mirrors, Paul. They still don't have that system down. They're going to get exposed this week. I say we're going to hang up at least another 45 on them, maybe a 50 burger, and then we'll see what they do. I don't think Dillon Gabriel's ever beaten a top 25 team. I was looking through some things earlier today. I don't see where he's ever beaten a top 25 team, dating back to his time at UCF. So when he's got going up against top competition, you know, I just don't see it, man. I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it either this weekend. It looks a little bit like a mismatch.
No, for sure, for sure. 100%. And more, you Sooners better realize. I don't know if old boy from Missouri still calls you, but Larry, y'all in for a rude awakening, baby. He probably don't call you no more, Paul, since they're cheeks now. He don't call you no more, does he?
I haven't heard from Larry in a while.
Yeah, you ain't going to hear from him now, man, especially not after this weekend.
Larry prefers to talk about the Switzer era, Bob Stoops. I haven't really heard him mention Venables.
Yeah, big game Bob, who lost every big game he was ever in. Hey, I mean, it's true. He won one big game, Paul, and after that, big game Bob, and all he did was go
ahead. By the way, we did check. Dillon did have a couple of top 25 wins. Now, I know you're going to laugh, but one was against Kansas and the other one was against Oklahoma State, which used to have a program, I think.
Yeah, no, Paul, I think old boy's trying to get fired, to be honest with you. I don't know what he's doing up there. I think he's tired of working. They won't fire his ass.
Oklahoma State under Gundy has become an absolute joke this year.
They're a joke. They're a joke, Paul. I don't know what's going on over there, but it just ain't the same. Paul, I love what you had yesterday with Bruce Feldman. I agree with him 100%. You know, I don't think he told any lies in that article that he wrote. The reality of it is football is a developmental sport, and it's also a sport where you got to do your scouting properly. And I think Sark with Bo Davis, Kyle Flood, Jeff Banks, you know, Choate, all those folks he brought in from Alabama and other places, you know, they're just coaches that understand what they're doing. And you can tell by the folks that they kind of ran off. You know, I don't want to say they ran them off, but the reality of it is, you know, some of those players that were here when they got here at the end of that first season hit the transfer portal, and it was very obvious, you know, who was leaving and why they were leaving. And the guys that they kept, there's a couple guys, Trevondre Sweat, Byron Murphy, Baron Sorrell, Kristen Jones. These guys are going to be NFL draft picks. They were not looking like NFL draft picks before Steve Sarkisian and staff got here. So I think staff deserves a lot of credit, Stark, everybody he's put together. And I also think, you know, that's one of those things people don't get. That's what makes it so hard for folks like Saban. You know, when you go from Kyle Flood and then Doug Marrone comes in for 1 year and then he decides to leave for the NFL, and then now you've got Eric Wolford there. I mean, the continuity in staff matters. That's the bottom line. And that's one thing Bubba, Daryl, them boys in Georgia don't get either. And Daryl, you didn't lose A.D. Mitchell to the portal. You lost A.D. Mitchell to Texas, baby. We took him from you, just like we took Arch Manning, and just like we taking that throne. We coming for it. You best be ready. You, Bubba, everybody, be ready. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Great to hear from you, Manuel. Matt in Fort Worth is up next. Hello, Matt.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, I wanted to give a little response to Manuel. He better hope, him and his Texas fans better hope that they blow us out on Saturday like everyone's talking about. Otherwise, it's going to be an effed up night for him. And anything can happen in this game. We'll see.
Hey, I mean, this may be the first time we're getting an absolute battle royal between OU and Texas fans. So this is great. We're the preview of things to come.
That's right. That's right. Hey, we'll see, though, on Saturday. Anything can happen. It's a good rivalry. And, yeah, we'll see. But everyone's counting us out. We're going to show up. We're going to play. He's saying that he doesn't think our defense is legit. We'll find out on Saturday. We'll find out. I mean, we've seen this before with Texas where they're hyped up. They beat a decent team. They beat Alabama early on in the season. I like to see them play again. We'll see. But, yeah, OU's going to bring it on Saturday. We're coming to whoop some ass. And next year we're going to run the SEC too. Everyone's counting us out there. We're a much better program than what people think. And, yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Hey, thanks. Not quite Auburn, Alabama level, Alabama, Georgia, but well, those guys have a year to work on their material before we welcome them to the SEC. We'll take a short break. Pat Smith's joining us in about 15 minutes. We are back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Smith will join us in just a few minutes. Appreciate all of you calling in. And let's talk to Betsy in Florida next. Hey, Betsy.
Hey, Paul.
How are you? Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm good. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, look, you know what? I wanted to talk to you about, well, I have the TV on, but I'm going to walk away from it.
Okay.
I wanted to talk to you about the University of Florida. What do you think about the future of our football program? And here's the thing I want to start out with. Okay, and I heard that guy yesterday. I think it was Bear from Florida, where the hell he was from. But anyway, here's the thing. You know, Billy Napier makes almost $8 million a year. Yeah. And what, he can't figure out how to work this team out? Because you know what? I'm tired of losing. I'm an alumni. Our oldest son is an alumni, and I'm tired of losing. And you know what? Another thing is, too, and I know, let's give it a chance. Let's do all this stuff. I get it, okay? But here's the thing. There's something going wrong in this situation with all these people. That's what I'm saying. And what do you think about that?
Well, I agree with a lot of what you said, Betsy, because nobody wants to hear patience, and that's been the mantra from people down there. That doesn't work. This isn't a starter program. This is the University of Florida. And
thank you.
You should be able to turn that thing around fairly quickly. You shouldn't be embarrassed like Florida was, first against Utah and then against Kentucky, having 13 people on the field. Having players.
Yeah, exactly. And you know,
that's inexcusable.
But exactly. That situation with Kentucky, I was like, are you serious? I have never, I have never seen University of Florida play that badly. And you know what? Look, there is no situation where you can say, well, you know, it was too loud in Kentucky. Are you serious?
No.
You've been in the swamp. When I'm in the swamp, I have to put things in my ears so I don't lose my hearing. So I don't buy that. But there's something terribly wrong going on up there.
Well, at some point, Betsy, nobody's there yet because the Florida game bought him a lot of goodwill, and he managed to throw it all away in Lexington.
I know.
But every game becomes a referendum on whether he understands what it takes to win at the highest level. And I don't care what he did in the past. I care about what he's doing now. And
me too.
I think you have to evaluate it every week. Not in the sense of making a change, because that will come soon enough. Ultimately, these decisions take care of themselves pretty quickly.
So I have literally one or maybe a little two more questions to ask
you. Sure.
So one of the things that I noticed at the game with Kentucky was, and you know, and I think our quarterback is pretty great, but here's the thing. If you can play in the swamp, then you should be able to play anywhere else. I get it, okay? But there were times when the quarterback, or our quarterback, obviously got it. And you know what? He had nobody open. And he literally, seriously, had, you know, he had I was just like sitting here going, run, go. Number one. Number two, so many of our guys miss tackles. And there was a lot of other things that were going on. And I was just like going, are you serious? Because you don't play that way.
Betsy, all I can say is this.
So what the hell's going on?
I mean, we have to move on. But you have to give it a level of patience. But patience has a due date. And that due date is coming soon. Thank you for the call. Derek is in California. Derek, what's up?
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Okay. Well, you know, I didn't want it to make it seem like I didn't. Well, this week I'm actually going through the agony of defeat. I didn't want it to seem like I call when we win and I don't call when we don't win because I'm not that type of guy. You know, you got to take the bitter with the sweet.
Well, Derek, I mean, first of all, we're talking about Jaden here. I thought he was fantastic against Ole Miss.
He was. He was spot on. To get that many yards, throw that many balls, and then the defense don't hold him back, man, I was heartbroken. I was, ooh, bruh. Man, I was done. But everybody saw the game, and, you know what the problems are. And but I just wanted to pump up Jaden and, you know, I don't know if he listens. He listens sometimes, but his mom does.
I think it's always tough, but you know anybody that plays football knows that it's a team sport. But there is nothing your nephew could have done Saturday night any better. Nothing.
Yeah, he was spot on. I was so proud of that particular part, but we didn't get the win, so it was like a bittersweet kind of a situation for me and the fam because most of the Inland Empire, that's out in California, was watching the game because they know that he comes from this particular area, and they also watch him play high school ball around this area. So he's actually well known and well liked, you know, in the area on the West Coast, Inland Empire. So, but I just wanted to call in and you know put my two cents in, and because I didn't want it to make it, I didn't want it to seem like I didn't call when we win, and I call when we don't win. You know, that particular part of it. I didn't want to seem like a yak. I was like, what is a yak? I heard when he made the comment. So please explain to me what a yak is. What is that?
I'm not really certain you would ever be. I think a yak is just somebody that just calls to call. But you always have a purpose. And Derek, thank you. Give Jaden and his folks our best, and we hope to talk to you very, very soon. We're up against a break. Pat Smith will join us next to give us the lay of the land in Alabama as Nick Saban faces another one of these games like 2 weeks ago. He won that one. What about Saturday in College Station?
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. It is great to have all of you here, and we have certainly talked a lot about this game, but I'm really interested in just the mindset. And you know, we're wondering exactly what is happening in Alabama. Everything seems to have switched from extreme negativity to the biggest game in Nick Saban's career to, hey, just another game in Kyle Field. Pat Smith joins us, of course, does the show in Birmingham right before us, three-man front. Always great to have him here. Also the person that helped put this program into orbit many, many years ago. Pat, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. Hope all's well.
We are doing great. So let's set the table with what you're hearing. You're there. You're at the epicenter of Bama football, but it's hard to believe it was only 2 weeks ago that it was all doom and all gloom.
It sure was, Paul. You know, watching that South Florida game, it kind of reminded me back to when you and I did that show the Monday after La Monroe knocked off Nick Saban and the Tide back in 2007. But, no, it went from that point, you know, hey, Jalen Milroe didn't play in the game. A lot of people wondered why Tyler Buchner was ever given an opportunity to come to Tuscaloosa based on that performance. But, yeah, no, it turned from nervousness to anxiousness as you went into the Ole Miss week. not a lot of people was worried about what happened last week at Mississippi State. But I'll tell you, this is one of those weeks where folks are back being anxious again like they were the Lane Kiffin week. They just really don't know what kind of offense they're going to see in College Station going up against a very good Texas A&M team. A lot of people are wondering where this Tide team is, and this is going to be a very good barometer where they currently stand.
And I also wonder, Pat, if we're all not participating in a false narrative leading us to believe this Alabama team is something that it's not. What I mean by that is, and I'm the, as guilty as anybody. I was on the show earlier today talking about all the things that literally do not matter, like what Miss Terry said to Nick Saban, and Saban's got his old swagger back. Help frame that. It's part of the narrative. It makes Alabama feel, people feel great, but does it really even make any difference?
Well, it's interesting, Paul, because before the season started, we had writers writing stories that actually broke down tape of Nick Saban press conferences of the last 10 years, at how much he smiled and how that correlated to a good Alabama team or a bad Alabama team. But over the last couple of weeks, folks have seen that fire on the sidelines, something that they haven't seen in a couple of years. So I think they're trying to say, look, coach is back. You know, coach is back chewing people out. But when you talk to players or you talk to people around the program, Nick Saban has not stopped doing that at practice. Or maybe the national TV cameras don't hone in quite on Nick Saban all the time. But Nick continues to do plenty of yelling and plenty of things at practice. It's just for whatever reason, within the last 2 years, this team, whether it's them not being able to recruit the type of player that they thought they were getting, or maybe the stars were wrong, or maybe their evaluation was incorrect. But some of the guys that they really depended on the last 2 years just really haven't stepped up. And from an offensive side of things, I think Tommy Reese is still trying to find his way. And I think we can all see with your own eyes, Paul, that the quarterback situation is not what they thought it was going to be coming out of spring practice or out of the transfer portal.
Yeah, I want to ask you about Tommy Reese, talking to Pat Smith here. I mean, really underwhelming early on. It seemed like he had some aversion to Jalen Milroe. Now that he has been publicly reprimanded by being told his guy is not the guy, how much has he altered his offense to do what he should be doing at all times, and that suit his quarterback?
Well, I think there was that come-to-Jesus meeting. I think the same kind of meeting that Bill O'Brien had after the loss at College Station with Nick Saban a couple of years ago, when Bryce Young had all sorts of options that Bill O'Brien called, and after they got back to Tuscaloosa, they kind of straightened that out and kind of made sure the playbook played to Bryce Young's strengths. I think it's kind of Tommy Reese now understanding that where his quarterback currently is, and that's Jalen Milroe, and what they're going to need to do, a lot of, you know, read options, a lot of him being able to take the ball and run it. But I will defend Tommy Reese on one thing. After the Texas game, I can tell you, based on the people that I talked to, and once you go back and you look at the All-22 film on the football field, Tommy Reese dialed up some really good plays. Unfortunately, Jalen Milroe made some very bad decisions, and that's been kind of the thing coming through fall camp, Paul. But a lot of people around the team were kind of saying, look, Jalen Milroe's got the best talent and the most talent of all the quarterbacks, but it's the continued mistakes that he would make and that playbook. And I think Tommy Reese now has gone back, and I'm not saying that he has shrunk the playbook, but just like Bill O'Brien did a couple years ago with Bryce Young, they've made an adjustment or two. And I think you're going to be able to see now moving forward that they're going to play more to Jalen Milroe's strengths. And hopefully he's going to be able to understand that playbook better and not make those mistakes that he made in the Texas game.
Pat, on the other side, Lane Kiffin went off and tried to tell everybody what was happening on the defensive side. And that defense, whoever was calling the play, shut him down lickety-split. What is your assessment of this Alabama defense right now? And is Kevin Steele still there?
Kevin Steele, I can confirm, Paul, that Kevin Steele is still in Tuscaloosa, and he is still doing his job. Him and T-Rob make a great team. We've seen this before in Tuscaloosa where, okay, you got a DC, but listen, Pete Golding, he was heavily involved when Tosh LePoy was calling plays at Alabama. That's just the way that system kind of works under Nick Saban. But no, the defense has been outstanding. I mean, we look at Dallas Turner. What Turner is doing right now with both sacks and tackles for loss, I mean, he's been outstanding. He's a guy that, you know, really last year, him and Will Anderson were supposed to be that 1-2 punch, And for whatever reason, both of them were neutralized. Well, Dallas Turner is having just an incredible season on the defensive front. And with Terrion Arnold and Kool-Aid McKinstry and Malachi Moore playing the way they are in the secondary, Alabama feels really good about that. They got a little injuries on the linebacker front, but overall, they feel really good about that defense. Now, if they could just get the offensive line and Jalen Milroe playing the way they think they're capable of, then Alabama feels pretty good about their situation.
Talking to Pat Smith, Pat, let me switch gears for a second. And you are plugged into the high school scene there better than anyone, and knew Bo Nix extremely well from the time he started playing ball in the Birmingham area. Can we go back a little bit? And he's a Heisman candidate now at Oregon. What happened to Bo Nix at Auburn, and was it Brian Harsin? What was it that caused him to abandon his school that he had started every game, his father's school? Why is he at Oregon?
Well, basically, it was Brian Harsin. That is just another like notch on the old belt that you could put that Brian Harsin pretty much screwed up. I mean, listen, Bo Nix, you just laid it out, Paul. Bo Nix grew up an Auburn fan. Bo Nix, his father, was a legendary quarterback at Auburn. You know, Bo grew up in Pinson, Alabama, a suburb of Birmingham. He was a five-star that went to Auburn. And it was just so disjointed in regards to the way the offense was going to be run. And then, you know, once that Brian Harsin was going to be the head coach, and that was pretty much, you know, hey, look, you know, it's time for me to try to look elsewhere and try to get somewhere that's going to play to my strengths. And look at it, Bodacious, he is on skyscrapers in Manhattan and all over the country. He's got a wonderful Heisman Trophy campaign going on. But, you know, Auburn, not so much Auburn the school, but it was the fact that the coaching staff and what was there at Auburn is what turned Bo Nix off. And that was the best move for him. I mean, you're looking now at a kid that probably will be one of the top quarterbacks listed for the NFL draft, whereas if he would have stayed at Auburn under Brian Harsin, I think he would have already left anyway, but that was going to be a disaster.
Which brings me to Hugh Freeze. I wasn't sure what I was watching Saturday. It seemed like a mirage, the fact that Auburn was one bounce of the ball away from maybe beating the number one team in the country. Tell us a little bit about this Auburn program right now. Not so much this year, but what does it look like in terms of what it's getting recruiting-wise and the future?
Well, I will tell you this. If you're going to get Auburn, you better get them now. Because what Hugh Freeze has done on the high school scene, what he has been able to mend those fences, he's been out recruiting. He's been at every possible school. He's got his coaches out. They've redeveloped those deep relationships that they had prior to Brian Harsin coming to Auburn. You know, he rolled the dice with the transfer portal, 40 new additions to this roster. Obviously, it's just like back in the old days, Paul, before the transfer portal, it was always about JUCO players. You know, are those JUCO guys going to be able to come in, not only contribute, but kind of buy into the whole team idea and the plan that the coaches have? And it's taken some of them have worked out really nicely. Others have not. That's just what happens in this day and age of roster management. But I will tell you this. He's flipped a five-star commitment from Alabama. He's flipped a five-star commitment to Georgia. He has still got a lot of work to do, and there was a lot of five-stars standing on the sideline last week during that Georgia game that was in town, and the people that I talked to, they feel really confident that there's going to be some more flipping going on. He is making an impact immediately. That's what Auburn needed to happen because Brian Harsin just absolutely torched the place, and if Harsin would have stayed, the program would have been 5-6 years behind everybody else in the SEC. So people better pay attention because Hugh Freeze knows this league. And once he can get a quarterback himself and kind of develop his system in that program, better watch out. He's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
And we're talking about Auburn, and everybody knows the geography, Pat. And things are different today than they used to be. But it used to be that, you know, they made a living off of Georgia players. But right now, how would you assess the battles that Auburn is dealing with? Because for a long time, under Malzahn and Brian Harsin, obviously, I mean, there weren't any more Alabama-Auburn battles. Auburn was nowhere in those battles, were they?
No, they weren't. And so, you know, one thing is for sure, over the last probably 5-6 years, the state of Alabama, if you look at the top 10 players on anybody's list in the state of Alabama, the majority of them were going to Alabama. Matter of fact, Clemson was coming in and grabbing more players than Auburn was getting on the list. And so, you know, what Auburn has been able to do is been able to win some of these one-on-one recruiting battles. And I say this as a caveat, Paul, because it's changed so much now with NIL. You've got so many of these kids, they commit, and then they flip somewhere else. And then depending on what kind of NIL situation another school in the conference may have, they may be flipped again before National Signing Day. But I think Kirby Smart is paying very close attention, and you know Nick Saban because of his prowess in regards to the way that he recruits. He's been paying very much attention, especially when he had one of his five stars from the state of Alabama in Mobile flip to Auburn. That's concerning, and so guys need to pay attention. But Hugh Freeze is winning some of these one-on-one battles against Kirby and Nick Saban.
Pat, finally, you're talking about high schools, and you're affiliated with one of the preeminent high schools in the entire country, really doing their play-by-play. So you're on these campuses every Friday, talking to players, talking to coaches. I know it's hard to encapsulate what 17-year-olds are thinking right now in terms of the elite players making decisions, but is there some way to give us a composite of their mindset?
Absolutely, and I could tell you yesterday, the decision by the Georgia High School Athletic Association to allow NIL, it got a lot of people's attention. The state of Florida is about to change what they do. State of Alabama is behind the eight ball right now. So is Mississippi. So is Texas. So look for those southern states to start looking at the high school NIL situation a little bit differently. One thing I can tell you, Paul, talking to these coaches week in and week out, the thing that is very surprising to them, don't get me wrong, even the five stars are going to continue to be recruited by these college football coaches. But what is happening now is you're not seeing as many visits for maybe these three, four-star guys because these blue blood programs, they're going to dip their toe in the portal and they're not going to spend all this time on the high school recruiting trail. They want the guys that's got, they're a little older, they've got life experiences, maybe they're a little bit more mature, they don't have to really deal with 17 and 18-year-olds. That's the part to me, Paul, that's the most shocking on the high school scene as of right now is that these coaches are not as prevalent on these high school campuses watching ball or trying to recruit these kids because all of them believe that basically, hey, the transfer portal is my Walmart. I can go there, get my groceries, get my oil changed, do whatever I need to do. That's what the transfer portal is now for these college football coaches.
Absolutely fascinating stuff. Pat Smith, just great to have you here with such vast knowledge. Pat, thanks. Hope to see you soon.
Hey, thanks, Paul. Best of Linda.
You got it. Pat Smith joining us from Birmingham. I mean, that was a mouthful there, not only on Bama, but I have never heard anybody talk about Bo Nix and Brian Harsin like I heard there. And then the nuggets on high school football were really revealing. We'll take a break. More to come. Your reaction to all of that right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back here as we close down the third hour on a Wednesday. Squirrel is up next.
I wanted to clarify what a yacht was, but first of all, have you ever heard of an event called Cruising the Coast?
No.
Well, I'm down here on the greater Biloxi area right now. There's the largest vintage or collectible car event is going on right now. It's every year, the first week of October. And if you've got any friends that own collectible cars, they definitely know about this event. They've probably been down here. But there's over 10,000 collectible cars registered. And just the highways is full of just cars. I mean, just trucks and vehicles that just, I mean, it's just mind-blowing. I mean, from the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and I mean, this is unbelievable, some of the vehicles that you'll see down here. And there's a big auction going on tomorrow at the Coliseum. It's televised, actually, on one of the networks, and I'm going to be going down there and attending that. But is there any cars from your childhood that stir a memory?
Yes, my first car.
What would that be?
My poor mother didn't have much, but she wanted to get me a graduation present after college. And she got me a used powder blue Ford Maverick.
I saw a Gremlin today, yeah, so I guarantee you there's a Maverick. There's a Maverick float.
It wasn't as bad as the Gremlin, and it wasn't as bad as the Pinto, but it was worse than any other car. And when she gave it to me, I mean, I wasn't as good an actor then as I am now, I acted very enthusiastic until I got behind the wheel, and all of a sudden fire spit out of the exhaust. And I think she paid $1,000 for it, and it probably cost me $5,000 in repairs before I finally junked it.
I got the 069 Galaxy 500, the 4.5 Galaxy 500, and I saw one of those today, but it was in mint condition, like the one I had. But like I said, it's just really a cool event if anybody's into collectible cars and trucks. But a Yat, and if you may recall, several years ago when Augie first started calling in, I referred to him as a Yat.
That's a New Orleans phrase, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah, you know, Yat is Y-A-T, Yat.
Right, okay.
And somebody called somebody one the other day, and somebody was asking what one is. You have, I mean, everybody thinks people from New Orleans are all Cajuns. They're not. People from New Orleans are not Cajuns. You have to get into the bayou a little further west and a little further south to get into Cajun country, and the people that speak like Cajuns. Like, Augie would be a Yat. The guy from the oil rig, Dwayne,
he's a Yat.
Yeah, these are people from New Orleans. They're not Cajuns. They don't speak with a Cajun accent. But when they instead of saying, where Yat, they go, where Yat?
Gotcha.
And that's why they're called Yats, Y-A-T's. It's just because of the way they talk. And excuse my blue heeler over here. But anyhow, that's what a Yat is.
You got
I just
a blue heel?
To clarify
wow.
that. No, a Yat is somebody from New Orleans. no, man, a blue heeler is a dog.
No, but, no, I know what a blue heeler is.
Yeah.
I know what a
I got
blue
one
heeler
if you
is,
want
a blue
it.
Heeler. I know more about dogs than I do college football.
I got a two-year-old that just loves Charlotte, North Carolina, I bet. I'll even drive him over there to you if you want it. Thanks for taking my call.
Aloha. Bring it on. We'll be back. Another hour to go. Thanks for being
here. You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.